It's music by Joaquin Rodrigo. Junto al Generalife is the name of the piece. It comes from a CD called The 20th Century Guitar by guitarist Philip Hemmo. This just out this year, and Philip Hemmo is going to be performing the next concert on the series by hosted by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. And that concert will be on Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the location for all of their concerts, Faith Lutheran Church on Whittier Avenue at Outer Park Drive in Springfield. You can get more information on the Facebook page for the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. Philip Hemmo actually is returning to our area, having been here previously and having come from various places. We'll get his full information on all of that, but he actually has a degree from Illinois State University, for example, as well as University of Arizona. And he is with us right now in the studio. That was not live, but he will be playing for us live on the show. Thanks very much for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I've got a couple of questions that that are implied by everything I've said so far. Might as well begin with what we began with, which was the music itself, Joaquin Rodrigo's music, Junto al Generalife, and this has to do with the city of Granada in Spain, and I've seen the name of the Generalife before. I've never really been sure until you told me a minute ago how to pronounce it, or what it is. And I still don't know what it is. So tell us a little bit about that piece.
Well, you know, I've always been a big fan of Rodrigo's works. He is one of our most important composers of the 20th century.
And when you say our, you mean guitarist.
That is correct.
Right.
His Concerto de Aranjuez is one of the standards in the concerto repertoire for classical guitarists and, you know, just an incredibly talented composer. And your listeners may or may not know, he was blind at age 2 or 3, and his primary instrument was piano. So it's so interesting to think that one of our most important composers for classical guitar was a blind piano composer who, in his works, kind of emulates the sound of guitar. The Junto al Generalife, the Generalife are the royal gardens that are outside of the Alhambra in Granada. And the story goes that Rodrigo bases that works on the wind rustling through the gardens and the trees and the water from the fountains and the birds chirping overhead. So again, I just think it's amazing to have a blind piano composer write these amazing works for classical guitar that tell such a picturesque story.
Except it sounds like, as you described, it was as much the sound that inspired him. Oh, well, primarily perhaps the sound that inspired him.
Yes.
Unless somebody walked him around the gardens and described them to him.
I think you hit it right on the head. It was what he heard and how he interpreted it for our instrument.
Junto means what? Junto, close by the Generalife.
Exactly.
Nearby.
Exactly.
You mentioned in the CD from which we played this, which is your most recent, the 20th Century Guitar. You also have one called the Romantic Guitar, which we may sample later. You told me before we started the program that everything on this has some sort of story behind it. I mean, every piece, of course, has a story, but some more than others and in different ways. Does the notion of a story show up frequently in your concert programming?
I try to. I think that when composers take that extra effort to try and paint a picture, I really want to try and interpret and convey that picture to my audience as best I can. And on that CD, all of the composers, Villalobos, Rodrigo, even Albéniz, they all are painting very interesting pictures with their works. It's great.
And you have a fellow named, who I haven't heard of, named Ross Edwards.
Right, a very awesome composer. He is a very famous composer from Australia, and I came upon a set of his works and was just so blown away. And I learned the Black Wattle Caprices to record for this disc, and I'll be playing them at the concert on Saturday. And over the course of learning them, I had some questions. So I went to his publisher in Australia, and I'm like, I've got some questions. How do I ask these questions of this contemporary composer? And they gave me his email address. So what happened after that? We went back and forth with a number of emails, and he's a real good man. He sent me some interesting manuscripts of some marimba pieces that he wants me to try and arrange for solo classical guitar, so that'll be next summer's project.
He wants you to arrange his music?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Why doesn't he do it himself?
Not a guitarist.
But he obviously knows how to write for the guitar.
Or
doesn't he? Was that the problem?
I think that he understands how the instrument works and is able to compose for it, but potentially some of the nuance becomes a little bit more complicated. And I think that that's the reason that he asked me. He has a number of other works that have also been transcribed by other guitarists for this. I assume for the same reason.
In the case of Ross Edwards, you have the advantage that you could ask him questions. When you are playing something by somebody like Rodrigo, who died not all that long ago, just in 1999, but nonetheless isn't with us anymore, and you encounter questions that could be technical, they could be musical, what do you do in that case?
There are some sources to go back to. There is a book that his wife wrote, basically about her life with him, that has brief glimpses into some of the compositional elements with a lot of his guitar works. You have to kind of read between the lines. There's probably, in this entire book, less than a paragraph about that particular composition. Then you have to try and see if you can't find people who worked directly with him, Pepe Romero, Scott Tennant, and take a listen to what they're doing and ask them questions based on, you know, I can't ask Rodrigo anymore. What did he tell you about this? And of course, the worst answer you can get is he didn't say anything about it.
But you hope maybe that, but just by rubbing elbows with him, they might have figured out something. And is that an advantage in that particular case to listening to recordings? I mean, most of the pieces that are on everything else, I think, that's on this recording has been recorded numerous times by other people.
Yes.
So you can go and listen to recording of somebody else. You may have studied the piece and thought, well, I think it goes this way. You hear them doing something else and you wonder, well, that may or may not be what it says on the page. Why did they do it that way? And
exactly.
Then you can either try to analyze it yourself or call them up, as you say, and just
exactly. One interesting point, since you bring up the topic, the Five Preludes by Villa-Lobos. These are pieces that are core to our repertoire. I've taught them for decades. I've played them. In learning them for this recording, I started doing some research. And what I found was I found some interesting information. Those pieces were published in 1940, so one must assume they were probably written in the 1 or 2 years leading up to 1940. In the late 20s, Villa-Lobos travels to Paris and he studies with Paul Dukas, the great composer who was the resident composer instructor at the Paris Conservatory. And he goes to Dukas not because he needs help with his composition. He's already a well-known South American composer. He, by his own admission, had run into a problem where he felt he couldn't take his impressionistic compositional style any further because he was trapped by traditional form. So we don't have documentation of what conversation he and Dukas had. But what's interesting is when you listen to all five preludes and you play them with limited interruption between each movement, they do tend to connect like a giant puzzle piece where the conclusion of the first prelude has harmonic relationship to the second, the beginning of the second. The end of the second has harmonic relationship to the beginning of the third, so on and so forth. So you start to wonder whether or not there was an intent that hasn't been documented and that we have no way of verifying because all the parties are deceased, that perhaps was the result of that interaction with Dukas. It's interesting. It's an interesting premise.
So as a result, do you normally play all five together?
I do. For time's sake, on this Saturday's program, I'll only be playing two or three of them. You know, normally I do play all five, but for time constraints, I'm only going to play selections from.
And I think today you have some of them
for sure. Oh, I'd love to.
Shall we? Your choice.
Okay, sounds good.
Philip Hemmo is with us. He's playing live in our studios, music by Heitor Villa-Lobos, and he'll be performing a concert presented by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society Saturday night at 8 o'clock in Springfield, of course.
So the five preludes are each homages to different people, places, or things. So I'll play a couple of them for you today. I'll play prelude number one, which is an homage to the Brazilian country dweller. And then I'll play prelude number three, which is an homage to Villa-Lobos' favorite composer, Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Those were two out of the total five preludes by Brazilian composer Heitor Villa-Lobos, performed here in our studio, live, by Philip Hemmo. Those all five pieces appear on his latest recording, which is called The 20th Century Guitar. He'll be playing some of those as part of a program presented by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society, Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Faith Lutheran Church on Whittier Avenue in Springfield. For more information on the concert, you can phone area 217-726-8991. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Phil, you mentioned that the second of those preludes that you played, which is actually the third in the sequence, was an homage to Johann Sebastian Bach. And there's a famous series of pieces that Villa-Lobos wrote called Bachianas Brasileiras, which was supposed to be sort of a combination of influence by Bach and influence from popular or at least traditional Brazilian music in one way or another. And it's often very difficult to figure out where does Bach come in. But there were a few moments in there where I would have guessed anyway that the sort of some moments of counterpoint that sounded like they could clearly have been influenced by Bach. And actually there was a chord sequence that sounded like it could have come straight out of the Bachianas Brasileiras number 5, which is the famous one with soprano and cellos.
And also Segovia, the great Spanish guitarist Andrés Segovia, worked very closely with Villa-Lobos, and that piece was arranged by Segovia for solo classical guitar and voice. And I've performed those pieces a number of times. I'm actually doing them on a concert in Tucson, Arizona, February 1st. I did want to make mention, if your listeners can, also go to my website, which is philhemo.com, and that has information on the concert on Saturday, as well as at least one more, possibly two additional performances that'll be occurring in the region. So, by all means.
Okay, and now I want to know, why have you not corrected my pronunciation of your name? I've been saying Hemmo.
Oh, it's all good.
Because there's two M's.
Between friends.
Hemmo. Okay, I don't need to write this down. I will remember now.
What's a long E between friends?
Yeah, that's right. But you do spell it H-E-M-M-O.
That is correct.
If you go to find it online, you want to be sure you spell that right. You mentioned University of Arizona. You actually got your bachelor's degree there.
I did. I was fortunate enough to do my bachelor's degree at the U of A, and then I came up here to study with my master's degree at Illinois State, and my wife did some postgraduate study abroad, which was a wonderful experience. And we returned to Tucson back in 95, and I was hired by the University of Arizona as a faculty member, and I was very grateful for the opportunity. I did a lot of touring during those years. I published a textbook which is used all across the United States even to this date, Beginning Classroom Guitar by Philip Hemmo. It's in the second edition at this point, and you know, it was very nice. I also was the director of the guitar studies program at a large community college district in Tucson, Pima Community College, which was also a great experience. It's funny, I had a communication with a student who's going to do his doctorate up at Northwestern, who was one of my students at Pima College, and then went on to do a bachelor's degree at the University of Arizona. So it's amazing. There's a web all across the country.
Right. What brought you back to Springfield? Or what you brought you, well, let me back up. Where are you from originally?
Tucson, actually Southern California, but as I'm told, we moved out to Tucson when I was 6 weeks old. So everyone says I'm from Tucson.
You might as well be.
Exactly.
Starting that age. Then what brought you to Springfield then?
My wife has several degrees in voice, hence the Bachianas Brasileiras. We've performed it a number of times. And she has another master's degree in library science, and she was offered a position at University of Illinois Springfield. And it seemed like it was time for a different part of the country, time to go back to seasons and leave the extreme heat of the summers in Tucson and have seasons again, have some snow.
You'll get that.
I
know. Probably. Well, I say that. I mean, actually, there have been in my 21 years here, there have been a number of winters where with very little snow. So this doesn't necessarily always happen. I sometimes think I should go back to Pennsylvania if I really wanted four seasons. You get maybe two plus two halves around here. I always have the impression anyway. Sorry, that's a bit of a digression.
No worries.
I'm good at those sorts of things. You said your wife went abroad. Is that where you studied in Tel Aviv for
a
while?
That is correct, yes. We were at the Rubin Academy, which is a conservatory in Tel Aviv, and we were there for about 8 months after we finished with our master's degrees doing postgraduate study. It was a very interesting experience to live in another country, not just visit, and to be culturally aware of what goes on in another country. And it was a great experience. So we're thankful to have the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. Well, we take these opportunities wherever we can get them. Tell me a little bit about this guitar method of yours.
Beginning classroom guitar.
Yeah, what made you decide that somebody needed to know what Phil Hemo had to say about teaching guitar? Or did a publisher come to you, as often happens?
It was an interesting scenario. I was hired at the University of Arizona in 1995, and I was responsible for outreach, pedagogy, which is teaching the guitar students how to be teachers, and the guitar classes. Those were my areas of focus as a faculty member. And I realized that there wasn't a text that allowed for diversity in study for college students, meaning that there are a lot of textbooks that say you're going to study and be a classical guitarist. And there are a lot of textbooks that say you're going to study and learn how to strum chords. But there weren't a lot of texts that combined both elements and said there's no distinction, there's no difference between these two. They're just learning to play our instrument. And you can do both at the same time and utilize things from both areas in order to make you a better musician so that then you can decide what it is that you want to study. And the textbook does have a lot of classical examples. There's an emphasis on classical technique. I studied with a number of pedagogues who emphasize technical precision, and I try to carry that through into the textbook. But I give rock chord progressions and pentatonic scales and show how to solo over chord changes. And there are chord breaks that instruct students how to learn basic chord progressions that you would hear in pop songs. So I tried to have a more broader scope with the text. And it's funny, I got an email 2 weeks ago from some nice young man in Eastern Kentucky who used the textbook, and he emailed me and he said, "I found you on Facebook. I just wanted to tell you how much your book helped me." And it meant a lot to me, and those always mean a lot to me.
Sure. Well, you know, I used to work in medical book publishing, and I was kind of curious because I know when I did that as an acquisitions editor, sometimes I would go to somebody because somebody said, "Oh, you should go talk to this person and ask to write a book," and they'd never given any thought before. Equally as often, you'd have somebody come to you and say something very similar to what you just said. "Well, you know, we had these books, but nobody quite does this thing that I think people should do." So I was just curious which way around it went.
Yes, I was fortunate. I had several people who were mentoring me those first 2 years I was on faculty, and one was a very nice man, Dr. James O'Brien, and he had published numerous textbooks with at that point it was Shermer Books, and he introduced me to some very nice people, and they were thrilled to have the book, and I was grateful. So it was good karma. It all worked out.
Second edition in 2004, still in print, I presume.
It is still
and
in print.
Say, still being used.
Yes.
Philip Hemo, excuse me, is my guest here on Live and Local. We're about to hear a little bit more live music. What would you like to do next?
Another one of my favorite compositions on the new disc is El Decameron Negro by Leo Brower. And this Leo Brower is a Cuban composer who now lives in France. He's contemporary, still alive. And he writes in a very interesting style. Many of his pieces are very Stravinsky-esque. They have elements that remind you of if Stravinsky composed for guitar, what would it sound like? Well, in some cases, it might sound a lot like Leo Brower. The El Decameron Negro is a wonderful work. It was published in 1981, and I had the fortune of hearing it probably 2 years after it had been first published, when it wasn't being played a lot. And it's a programmatic piece. It tells a long story in the three movements. And I'm going to play the second movement for you, but let me just give you in brief what happens. It's based on a South African folk story. And in this folk story, there's a great warrior. And this warrior has basically abandoned the way of battle. And he's decided that all he wants to do is play the harp and be with his beloved. And there's an imminent battle. So his friends come and they say, "We need you." And he says, "You know, I just want to play my harp and stay with my beloved. I really don't want to go to battle." And eventually they convince him and he goes off to war begrudgingly. And as soon as the battle's over, he returns and his friends exile him. So he and his beloved escape as fast as they can. And during their escape, they travel through valleys, deep valleys, where the hooves of their horses echo off the valley walls. And lastly, there's discourse between them and his beloved. It strains to tell him how much she loves him over and over and over again. And there's tension and finally resolution. And this story is depicted in those three movements. The first movement is the harp of Guerrero, the warrior's harp. The second is the flight of the lovers through the Valley of Echoes. And the last is the ballad of a damsel in love. So I'm going to play for you the flight of the lovers through the Valley of Echoes. Really, really beautiful work by Leo Brower.
Music by Leo Brouwer from his sequence of three pieces called El Decameron Negro. I always wanted to know what is the Decameron? Is that the name of the warrior?
No.
I've never seen it explained.
Yes. You know, it's funny. At first glance, everybody, myself included, thinks that these are based on the Renaissance writings, the Black Decameron, and they're not.
They're not.
I honestly don't know why he chose that name. I don't know why he chose it. The pieces are originally composed for Sharon Isbin, the guitarist who's on faculty at the Juilliard School of Music, wonderful performer. I don't know.
But we do know the name of each of the pieces, as you described. This was the central one, The Flight of the Lovers Through the Valley of the Echoes. And I at least imagined at one point hearing the sound of the horse's hooves, that they would sort of fade away and so on. I don't know if that was the moment that I was supposed to hear those, but I thought I was hearing that in any event.
I think all that's important is that you were listening that way. And that's what's wonderful about all these works. I tried to choose pieces that told tales, that told stories.
And this is guitarist Phil Hemo regarding his CD out this year called The 20th Century Guitar. Some of these pieces will be on his recital Saturday night in Springfield, presented by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. It starts at 8 o'clock at Faith Lutheran Church. You're listening to Live and Local, where Phil is live in our studio. We have support today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday is a tasting of wines that pair with Thanksgiving, followed from 7 to 9 by a night of jazz with the Vine Street Syncopators. Details are on the Corkscrew's Facebook page. Phil, you were talking a little bit about your beginning classroom guitar textbook, and it's sort of melding of different types of guitar teaching, learning, playing. And so I'm curious to know, what's your own playing background besides classical? Have you done any jazz, for example, any rock playing, like every kid who ever picks up a guitar?
Well, see, I really honestly believe my passion is always with classical guitar. It always has been. But I really honestly believe that there's validity to every kind of music. I've been listening extensively over the past week. A friend made me a track CD of hip-hop, and I've been listening to some really obscure hip-hop. And it's just interesting to hear, when you listen closely, that I don't believe that you can just offhand discount any genre of music, because there's something valid about everything. You know, when I first started playing guitar a long time ago, I picked up an electric guitar and I studied. But there were, even at that point, there were songs from the 70s that were still around in the 80s that utilized folk elements or pseudo-classical elements. And I was always very intrigued. It always just, the sound excited me. And so I started studying classical when I was about 16, because I realized this is really where I wanted to go. That said, back in 2005, I had just completed a mini tour. I did the Vivaldi D Major Guitar Concerto, and I had done it with several different groups. Some of them were brass ensembles, which were really great to do that work for brass ensemble rather than strings, which is what it's scored for.
How on earth do you hear the guitar over a bunch of brass players?
You have to have an interesting mic, some interesting mic setup, and you have a very small orchestra. But it's actually the timbres, especially in the famous second movement, the timbres carry it's very interesting. It's very interesting. And I had done it with some traditional orchestras at that same time. And I kind of was at a point where I said, you know, I need to take a little bit of a break, because I'm working very hard to do this, and I'm getting to the point now where I need to kind of explore. So for about 3.5 years after that, I played and toured with rock bands. So the most prominent of those rock bands was a three-piece chick rock. We were a female singer who also played bass, and a female drummer and myself, and an alternative style of music. And we actually would play in California and Arizona and New Mexico and Texas.
And then you broke out, I assume, your electric guitar.
Yeah, exactly. That was...
Or acquired one for the occasion.
I was very fortunate. I had several manufacturers endorse me, so I would get instruments and I would use them. Great electric guitars by a company out of Rhode Island called Campbell American. Wonderful steel string guitars by Larrivée. And even to this day, I'm a D'Addario endorsed artist and I exclusively use D'Addario strings. So... yeah, but we toured.
Nice product around. Placement there, by the way.
Thank you. So we toured around, and it was good. It was a good cathartic musical exploration because by 2008, I had reached this point where I really had retained my focus and got back to classical playing and really, from my perspective, took everything up a notch and really fine-tuned some things and pushed the limits of what I'm able to do.
Did this somehow, as a result of having played in this band?
Oh, without a doubt.
In what way do you think?
I think sometimes you have to turn the page on the Etch-a-Sketch so that you can draw a better picture when you get back. You have to turn the page, start something fresh so that you can have perspective on what you were doing before and get back to it with new eyes.
It's sort of risky to use the Etch-a-Sketch.
Right. True. I realized it as I was saying
metaphor anymore.
I realized it as I was saying
it. The campaign is over.
Thank God.
As of this morning. I don't even remember whoever brought up that whole Etch-a-Sketch thing.
Yes.
I used to love Etch-a-Sketches when I was a kid.
Yes.
Now it's like, you don't even want to admit that. Phil Hemo is my guest here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can get more information on him at philhemo.com. That's Philhemo. Now is it Phil or Philip Hemo?
You know, I answer to both.
No, I mean on the website.
Oh, it's Phil, Phil.
Okay.
Yes.
And he'll be playing in Springfield Saturday night, a recital at 8 o'clock. Presentation of the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. They have another one that'll be coming up in January featuring the fellow who organizes those, Russell Brazell, and violinist Kamen Petkoff. They actually were on our show last year when they did a recital as part of the series. Zane Forshey, if I say his name right, will be giving one next April. Everything is at Faith Lutheran Church on Whittier Avenue in Springfield, all of these recitals from the Guitar Society. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Very glad to have Phil with us on the program today. What would you like to do next?
Why don't I play one more work for you? This is actually off of the first CD, The Romantic Guitar, or Romantic Works for Classical Guitar. And it's by another one of my favorite composers, Francisco Tárrega. Tárrega is a real interesting guy. He was composing at the turn of the 20th century, and he utilized this new guitar, which now resembles the instrument that we currently have, that was much louder because of the bracing that a guitar builder by the name of Torres came up with.
The bracing. Bracing. Okay.
Underneath the top of the guitar, Torres created what's known as the Torres fan bracing system. Prior to 1850, 1860, guitars were made much like violins with thicker wood, and the end result was they weren't resonant. That's why most of the early 19th century guitar music is parlor music, because it wasn't loud enough to be heard in concert halls. And as the piano became the prominent instrument and, of course, opera, guitar kind of got squeezed because you couldn't perform for large enough groups. Well, this fan bracing allows for the top of a classical guitar to be incredibly thin. And what causes it not to just collapse in on itself are a series of braces that form what looks like a fan. And that fan bracing structure provides volume and stability to the top of the guitar. So Tárrega had this incredible new instrument that he was able to utilize all these interesting virtuosic elements in his composition. So yeah, Francisco Tárrega is a very interesting composer.
Do all classical guitars now, or virtually all, use that bracing system?
There are a couple of variations, but it is let's put it this way. If you're a guitar builder, you start with the Torres bracing system and then you experiment away from it, or you look at other instruments that use variances of the Torres bracing system.
In order to make the sound that you want.
Exactly. Capriccio Arabe by Francisco Tárrega. Thank you.
Capriccio Arabe by Francisco Tárrega. It simply means Arab Caprice.
Yes.
Performed here by Philip Himo. Live in our studio, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can hear him in recital Saturday night at 8 o'clock at Faith Lutheran Church on Whittier Avenue, at Outer Park Drive in Springfield, a presentation of the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. Phil is a recent transplant to Springfield, and so we're very glad to have you in the community. Thanks for coming in. It's a great way to get presented right away, is get yourself recital.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And perhaps we'll see your name teaching somewhere. That you're in the community.
We'll see. This next couple of years seems like a lot of travel, so I don't know. I teach private students, but for the time being, I think that may be the limitation. I'd hate to be gone for 3 weeks and have to have someone teach a class.
As long as you're playing,
yes.
That's the good thing.
Yes.
Pleasure to have you on, and we'll have to have you back one of these days.
Thank you. Anytime.
Here are some other things you can go see and hear in our listening area for the next couple of days anyway. It's the weekly traditional Irish music session in downtown Champaign at Dublin O'Neill's. That's tonight at 8:30. The weekly bluegrass and gospel get-together, the Gunny Sack Review at the Yoder Center in Arthur, is at 7 o'clock. The Ark of Rutsky Quintet featuring Benito Gonzalez is at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. The Illinois State University Chamber Orchestra performs tonight at 8 at Kemp Recital Hall in Normal. There's a faculty recital by saxophonist Perry Rask at Milligan University's Kuiper Hall in Decatur. That's tonight at 7:30. University of Illinois faculty oboist John Dee gives a recital in Smith Memorial Hall on the UVI campus in Urbana tonight at 7:30. The Kilbourne Alley Blues Band is at DR Diggers in Champaign tonight at 9 o'clock. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana presents Shakespeare's Hamlet tonight in Urbana at 8 o'clock through Sunday, same time. Urbana High School Theater Department is presenting the musical Chicago at 7 o'clock tonight through Saturday, and then a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The Heartland Theater Company presents the play called Red in Bloomington tomorrow night at 7:30. The University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra performs at the Kranich Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. It's the opera by Daniel Catan called Florencia en el Amazonas opens tomorrow by the University of Illinois Opera Program at the Kranich Center in Urbana. That's Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 3 o'clock. An acoustic evening with Over the Rhine, folk music at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts in Bloomington tomorrow night, 7:30. And the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony gives a Veterans Day tribute a few days early, Thursday at the Downe Fine Arts Center in Charleston, at least a few days early from the traditional celebration, tomorrow night at 7:30. Lots of other things going on as well, but that's what we have time for today. Our broadcast is made possible by these business partners, Agrigold Hybrids of Mahomet, Charles M. Hundley of Champaign, Michael W. Walker Consulting of Urbana, and Bates Commodities of Normal. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you for your support. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. For Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly. Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up at 5 o'clock from NPR.